We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a report from the pharmaceutical journal, read by Charlotte Green.
Pharmacist Samuel Edwin Ashby, who attacked a member of the Royal Pharmaceutical Society's staff, has been jailed. Mr. Ashby attacked the interim head of professional conduct with an iron bar after being told he was to be struck off the register of pharmacists because of his aggressive behaviour.
Our thanks to Mrs. P. Gardfield of Otford for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Nick Revel. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Carrie Quinlan. Francis, let's start with a musical clue. Francis, whose blue routine lasted over an hour?
Well, it's all about the Tory conference, isn't it?
It is.
And Dave, who, unlike Gerald Ford, he can actually walk and talk at the same time. And this is thought to be so extraordinary. There are all these reports of Cameron's speech saying a virtuoso performance. This man can actually speak without an auto-cue. I mean, go to any school play, you see people speaking without an auto-cue. It's not that difficult. You just learn your lines. And it's all election fever, and the Tories are getting hyped up. I think perhaps rather overhyped, it has to be said, because there was a headline across the front of The Guardian on Thursday, and it said, "Revealed, anatomy of the Tory war machine." And it was just a floor plan of their office in London, where all the desks were, and where David Cameron sat, and where Michael Ashcroft sat, and that sort of thing. And then there was one of the Mail the previous day, huge headlines saying, "Tories unleash the attack dogs." And this is a reference to George Osborne. Doesn't anyone look less like an attack dog? He actually looks like the bastard love child of Piers Morgan and Mr. Bean, but... Anyway, they liked Osborne, they liked Cameron, and they loved Osborne. I've covered Tory conferences in the past, and the one thing you can say for certain is that about 10% of the delegates are actually dead, clinically dead. And they were snoozing away, or mouldering away, and suddenly he said the magic phrase, "death duties," and they all sat up and said, "Hurrah."
I think the Tory faithful are just looking forward to the election, because after it they get to have a new leader. But he said this thing about the election, he said, "We will fight and Britain will win." I thought, of course Britain's going to win. We're the only people taking part in the election.
So it made me think of Leon Britton, and I thought, I didn't remember he was standing.
I was reading that one of Cameron's tricks to do such a fantastic speech is that he doesn't go to the toilet before he goes on stage. Puts a new meaning on the fact when he said, "Well, this is me, no notes, it might be messy, but it'll be me."
Well, it explains why he looked full of something.
George Osborne called inheritance tax a tax on aspiration. And I thought, that's a strange... My greatest ambition is that my parents leave me a fortune.
David Cameron dared Gordon Brown to call a November election during a 67-minute speech that he made without a script at the Tory party conference. A lot has been made of Cameron not using autocue or a script. Personally, I think just because somebody can remember their lines doesn't mean they should be elected. This isn't the United States, you know. And at one point, a wag in the crowd shouted out, "Whose line is it anyway?" To which Cameron replied, "I've told you, we've all done things in our past that we regret." 2 points to Francis. Nick, have a listen to this.
Would that be somebody else trying to get elected?
I'll give you a point for trying to guess the question. Nick, whose sudden pullout was less than satisfactory?
Have you been filming my house? pulling out. So we're talking Basra and the Iraq adventure here.
Mr. Charm.
Yes, Mr. Brown went to Basra to tell the British troops, and indeed a happy nation, that 500 of them were being removed soon. But it was kind of weird, because when he got there, it wasn't a photo opportunity. It's just that, you know, he does get followed by the paparazzi since Beckham moved to Los Angeles. And so there were a few cameras there, and he lined the troops up and said, 500 of you are going home. And 230 of them said, "Oh, that's great, Gordon. I wish we could let the other 270 know. But they're already back in Britain because you announced this about 6 weeks ago."
Yeah.
Maybe you passed them on the tarmac at Bryce Norton and passed on the message then.
They'll be back by Christmas. I mean, ever since the First World War, there's been this back by Christmas. What is it about this? All wars now have to be arranged around the festive season. But I was rather thinking that the ones who don't get back by Christmas, there'll then be a famous Christmas truce and they'll play football in the streets of Basra.
We beat them at that, I tell you. I mean, you know, I'm sure we beat them.
Well, they
at football.
Don't even know it's Christmas.
Exactly.
If we've only got the airport, if we pull out more troops, we'll only have, like, sock shop. That'll be the only thing.
And we dominate the duty free.
Yeah.
He was also getting stick this week because the government are at the same time condemning human rights abuses in Burma and in Zimbabwe, and at the same time refusing asylum to Zimbabweans and Burmese people. And some people were saying that was hypocritical, but actually it's not. If you look at it logically, what it is, the more political refugees you send back to a country, then the more work it is for the security forces to beat them up and torture them, you know, probably have to buy new fuses for their cattle prods from a British company. And eventually all that work will exhaust them, so it'll be easier to overthrow the dictatorship. It's the best of all possible worlds, these.
I see you understand free market economics very well, Mr. Rowe. Welcome to BAE Systems.
It was a great opportunity to hear from Liam Fox. I always enjoy when they say, and now the Shadow Defence Secretary. And you think, oh, thank God we're defended against shadows.
He is a proper doctor, though, isn't he? He's not a Dr. Gillian McKeith or a Dr. John Reed. He's a Dr. Harold Chipman type of doctor.
Brown has been accused of playing cynical pre-election politics over his plans to withdraw 1,000 troops from Iraq. Cynical pre-election politics. Whoever heard of such a thing? 2 points to Nick and Carrie. Have a listen to this. Harry, which former comrade is Russian for a job swap?
Well, this is Putin, Vlad the MP, Russian president, about to become Russian prime minister because he feels like it, and then possibly become president again.
Mm.
You can't do more than two consecutive presidentships in Russia. That's the technical term. It's Russian. You may not recognise it as a word. Basically, so he's going to be prime minister. He'll also appoint the new president, and presumably, given the nod, he'll leave and then become president again, then become czar, pope.
Well, actually, the interesting thing is that the number one candidate for new president is the current prime minister. And I thought, oh, it's like wife swap with a nuclear button.
I think Blair's already looking into becoming queen.
No, surely he wanted to be the people's princess. Russian President Vladimir Putin is to stand for Prime Minister when he steps down as President next March. Putin could only return to the Kremlin if the new President was forced to stand down early because of ill health, corruption charges, or a visit to a London sushi restaurant.
I have to say, in this context, that Sandy brought me and Carrie lunch from that very restaurant today.
I did, actually.
We're not... It just put you off your stride a little bit. Would you like lunch? Yeah, that'd be great. Oh, thank you. Poisoned lunch.
I was nice. I bought polonium light. 2 points to carry there. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Hand on my heart, I've never heard that tune before, and yet now somehow I can tap along to it. Okay, it's got nothing to do with your question. Jeremy, who has tried to keep quiet about noise?
Is this the airport thing?
It is.
What is it that, Carrie, you know?
It's something about people complaining more about noise at Heathrow. Planes are quieter, but there are more of them, so it's noisier. But people are complaining more because their noise threshold has gone down since 1982.
Really?
Apparently people are more annoyed in 2007 than 1982.
Well, we've just got more irritable.
It may have been the Falklands, I don't know. Cheered everyone up.
Our bloodlust was sated. And our complaint factors. But wasn't it to do with the posher you are, the more you complain about aeroplanes?
Yeah, apparently the middle classes are more upset by aeroplanes.
They're upset about everything, though. I mean, well, posh people complain and they get more. That's why poor people get nothing. You know, council estates are falling apart. You have to go on rent strike to get your heating fixed.
Oh, blah, blah, blah,
blah. Hear me out. But posh people, they ring the council, they say, my daughter's cello recital was interrupted by a falling leaf, and a SWAT team arrives, all the trees are shot dead, the leaves are taken to Guantanamo Bay.
That's right. And apparently more irritated by planes that fly at night, which comes as a real shock.
They had to do a scientific research to discover that people get annoyed between 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. Well, duh. We've had this kind of complaint before. Isn't it? The Battle of Britain was nearly cancelled.
For the noise.
Yeah, it was irritating people at Biggin Hill. trying to stand over a difficult putt.
That's why Hitler called it off in the end. He was just getting so many letters from angry middle class people. What really pisses me off, they're building this runway just so that upper middle class gap year kids can fly off in copious numbers, and then nowhere is safe from hearing them have some conversation about how fantastic it is to really get to know black people, you know.
They need to be allowed to fly away to quieter countries.
Yeah, but they shouldn't be allowed to come back, that's the thing.
Aviation Minister Jim Fitzpatrick has rejected calls to publish a study which reveals that aircraft noise causes much more annoyance than previously thought. This has led to howls of protest, which fell on deaf ears as a 747 to Singapore took off behind him. So at the end of round one, the scores are exactly even. Francis and Nick have got 4 points, and so have Jeremy and Carrie. We'll start round two with a story from the BBC News website.
A convent in Italy is being shut down after a fight between its last three remaining nuns. So badly did relations deteriorate between the Sisters of Santa Clara in Bari that the Mother Superior ended up in hospital with scratches to her face. Sisters Anna Maria and Gian Battista say they were driven to distraction by the Mother Superior's nasty habits.
And thanks to everyone who sent that in. Francis, who's learning to make theirs a half?
Children, GCSE pupils.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They're going to be taught sensible drinking in schools. I mean, in my day, it was extracurricular. You had to do it in your own time. But now it's in the classroom. And then for homework in the evening, you can go down the pub. And then when you're doing your homework, after about 10 pints, you can show your workings. and they're going to get marked.
It's worth half a GCSE. And apparently they're going to teach teenagers that drinking to excess could make them fat, lead to impotence and an inability to enjoy sex, which in my day we called marriage. 2 points to Francis. Nick, why might there not be gold at the end of In Rainbows?
In Rainbows is the new Radiohead album. And the
You're a pop beat combo.
That's right. And this whole event is basically a lesson that you should never get high and then listen to Imagine. Because obviously what they did was imagined all the people sharing all the world. And they went, oh yeah, man, tell me what we could do. We could put our new album, right? We could bypass the record company, just put it straight on the net and let people download it and pay whatever it's worth, because we don't need record companies. What have they ever done for us? Apart from giving us a fat contract, helping us to record the songs, making us multi-millionaires and publicising our albums for the last 10 years, they've done nothing for us. We don't need them, you see? And then people will download the album and then the record companies will go bust and everybody will be selling their records on the internet, but nobody will know where any of the bands are. So somebody will come along and say, listen, so that you can get noticed above everybody else who's selling on the net, what we'll do for you is find you a place where you can record your records, a studio or something, and we'll help publicise you, buy you adverts and that. There's a couple of my mates and I, we've formed a company. I don't know what you call that kind of thing, maybe a recording company. So,
there's a whole thing on the website, which I checked out in a modern manner. And you can either download for a penny the entire album, or you can buy the box gift set.
For 40 quid.
For £40.
Yeah, it's a dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah. You know. You click on the tab marked Gift Horse, and then you select Mouth.
They are marvellous, Radiohead, and that means that if they are giving their record away for free, then James Blunt should be paying us.
Thing about naming the price that you buy things on the net. I've been on one of those shopping things, and actually, I paid £3.50 on eBay for Andy Hamilton.
Yeah, by the inch, that's pretty expensive.
Yes, well, he looks marvellous on the rockery. Rock band Radiohead.
Are they a rock band?
Called Wireless Head.
Really avant-garde rock avant-garde beat combination.
Upset the music industry by letting fans pay whatever they want to download their new album In rainbows, download. What's wrong with a good old wax cylinder? She points to Nick. Gary, which American import shouldn't be child's play?
Oh, is this the,
Can I just say, we wanted to play the theme tune to a rather fine old children's television programme called Number 73, but were forbidden for copyright reasons. I know.
I've always said what this quiz needs, is that when anyone gets an answer right, they should have to make a sandwich.
See? The way forward.
There's a few Number 73 fans. Can you still do the sandwich quiz intro?
Oh, golly. It's 25 years ago. And now the daring, dazzling, decifyingly dull, devastatingly dangerous, delectable, delicatessenable, divine sandwich quiz. Harry.
This is an Ofcom report on children's television, saying that it's in a dreadful, dreadful state, and only 17%, I think, of children's television on at the moment is homegrown and not repeats.
And to be fair, the average viewer is 3. I think they won't notice. That's the thing.
I'd like to write and complain that Teletubbies was on several years ago, this episode. And I was sceptical about it at first, and then I had a look at the television schedules today. And when I'd have been sort of sitting down to Danger Mouse and Howl, kids now get The Alan Titchmarsh Show and Midsummer Murders between 3 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon on ITV. So I think Ofcom may have a point, after all. And there's an awful lot of complaints about it. It's all American imports that aren't terribly realistic. We've mentioned Teletubbies. The dashing realism of that and the Tomorrow People are long forgotten, sadly.
Yeah, bring back the dancing mule and that weed. That would be nice.
Kids don't watch TV these days, do they? They're too busy training to be lap dancers and selling drugs to be stuck in front of a TV.
Only because Tiswas has finished.
Ah.
Magpie, that's what they want. Susan Stranks, that's when it all went wrong, when she stopped. Tony Bastable.
Tales of the Riverbank, now that was a good show.
Uncle Mac and Daphne Oxenford, they were my childhood heroes.
Pingu's not even British, though, is it?
No, that's Scandinavian, isn't it?
Pingu.
He's a penguin, isn't he?
No, don't blame the Scandinavians for that hideous thing.
No, Pingu's great.
It's bloody marvellous. But do you know what I love about Pingu? It's about real penguins. It's not like March of the Penguins, this soppy Hollywood version of it. It's your Ken Loach view of penguins. March of the Penguins is your Richard Curtis kind of three ice floes and a leopard seal kind of.
A report from Ofcom, the broadcasting regulator, who we adore, has called for more British children's shows to be made to prevent the further decline of kids' television. Apparently, the decline started with an American invasion. Where have I heard that before? Right, at the end of round 2, oh my goodness, we're still equal shares. Francis and Nick have got 9 points, and so have Jeremy and Carrie. And before we start round 3, here is a news item from the Derby Telegraph.
A life-sized cardboard cutout of a police officer used to help reduce shoplifting in Derbyshire has been stolen.
And our thanks to Debbie Graham for spotting that. Nick, whose cooking got the emergency services hot under the collar.
Somebody was walking through Soho and detected an acrid smell and became suspicious, which is kind of weird if you've ever walked through Soho. And they called the emergency services, and the emergency services went, oh, yes, yes, there is an acrid smell. And they thought it might be a chemical terror factory. And so firemen go into this establishment in their breathing gear, and it turns out it's a Thai chef in a Thai restaurant making a big pile of chili sauce called Nam Prick.
Pow,
I think. I don't know. I don't know what prick means. I think Nam Pow means Boris Johnson in Thai. But so the firemen went in and they're all like, you know, doing the job. Right. Put the chili sauce down and bring us some prawn crackers. And and that's basically it.
Well, it's not the first time spicy Thai cooking has led to a mass evacuation. I think it's.
I did think that as a country we'd moved on from the days when we thought that seasoning was a chemical weapons attack. It's depressing. What do you think it is, Professor Quatermass? Well, it's what we scientists call lemongrass. It can paralyze the entire body, leaving the country open to an alien invasion.
There's also, did you see the Harvard Medical School thing this week saying that chilies are the best painkillers?
Right.
They're devising these new painkillers made out of chilies because they say that, unlike other painkillers, You can take a chili and it will do the business without disrupting any other biological functions.
That's right. So, Amish and Anne, I'll get an operation in a Thai restaurant. I'll have the prawn satay, please, and an appendectomy.
People have never woken up after a late night chicken jalfrezi or something if they really don't think it's going to disrupt any other functions.
The thing I liked about the restaurant story was that the BBC website had the story, and then as one of their sort of sidebars, the recipe.
Yeah.
Emergency services sealed off an area of Soho last Monday for 3 hours after the smell of chilli sauce being cooked in a Thai restaurant was mistaken for a chemical terror attack. Soon after the alarm was raised, the streets of Soho were full of policemen, construction workers and cowboys as people fled the disco next door. Staff at sex shops ran for their lives and Tory MPs pretended they were in the area to visit a constituent. Jeremy, who might be guarding their nuts even more carefully this winter?
Is this our squirrel friend?
It is.
The Telegraph, who have to find somebody to hate, have launched a campaign against squirrels. because they're foreign, they're from the Americas, they're from the New World. And this story was saying, do you realise that our red squirrel population has been decimated? The red squirrel population is all gone. I knew this from birth. There are no red squirrels apart from on the Isle of Wight and in the occasional cage and in squirrel nutkin type stories, along with Flopsy and Covetousness and Beaky Mick and Titch. But they've launched a campaign against squirrels and why we're all to hate them. And people say, well, we're just rats with fluffy tails. Any animal that a person doesn't like, they say, oh, it's pigeons, they're rats with wings. You can't judge, just because you don't like something, you can't say it's a rat. I don't like slugs. I don't say, well, they're just rats without skeletons or ears or feet or tails or teeth or eyes. And they're telling us what we should do, how to get rid of them.
They had a guide on how to trap and kill squirrels. I have to say it looked exactly like last week's guide on how to trap and kill single parents, but
If you catch a grey squirrel, you're not allowed to release it into the wild, so you have to kill it.
Yes.
And the Telegraph recommends putting it in a sack and beating it to death.
It's an ancient procedure. We've been doing it for years. It keeps the numbers down. It's entirely humane. It's the same as putting a hamster in a blender. Yeah. They enjoy it. It is more humane than beating them to death with pool cues.
But after they recommended putting it in a sack and beating it with a stick, it said drowning is frowned upon. Now,
because you wouldn't want their life flashing before them, would you?
The government, DEFRA, wants to put them on the pill.
Yes, they do.
So
yes,
we can have sex with them.
Stop them breeding. There are millions of them, and so they're trying to stop them breeding by putting them on the pill, which is a tremendously touching faith, I think, in the honesty of squirrels, you know, that they will... And also the reliability, you can actually trust them to take the pill every day.
It'd be a lot easier than trying to put condoms on them, isn't it?
Actually, interestingly, then, there are no grey squirrels on the Isle of Wight.
Well, they can't afford the ferry fare.
Is that what it is?
They spent all their money on condoms.
They do make a funny noise, those squirrels. There was a squirrel in our shed that had this...
When you're having sex with them.
They do. If you do it right. There was one on our shed. And I heard this weird noise, and I looked out thinking, oh, that's a baby beating a fox up or something. So I said, noise. And it was, I don't know if they had a furball or choking on an acorn, but it was a squirrel.
Government scientists are developing a sterilization program to halt the growth of the grey squirrel population, whose numbers are believed to have reached 5 million. The contraceptive plan has already been opposed by animal rights groups and the Union of Catholic Squirrels.
Ready for the days of a squirrel pope.
You can make a movie with that and the three nuns fighting each other. Grace Pasolini from the dead. That's a winner, man. I tell you. You see the pope?
I'm so sorry.
Wonder, maybe that funny noise that squirrel was making as he held his acorn was going, Body of Christ, Body of Christ. Oh, dear.
Maybe some love. Right.
It was that cat book they've done about this cat that goes from Bavaria to meet the Pope. Did you read about that?
No.
No.
I haven't really got much more information. Just seemed...
isn't that the opening to a joke? A cat goes from Bavaria to meet the Pope.
Is it like, some former neighbour of his or something?
Yeah, I think so,
he's
yeah.
He's written about their cat who used to live next door to the Pope before he was the Pope. He hasn't visited much. since he became Pope, it turns out. So the cat goes to visit him.
Honest to God, I have no idea what we're talking about.
Are we not doing the story about the men on the Bristol Downs who were having an orgy and got interrupted by an enormous flashlight that firemen shone on them?
Can if you like.
Well, I just think it's rather lovely that we live in an age where the correct response now for being interrupted in your orgy in a bush having sex with lots of strangers is, do you mind?
Before we reveal the final scores... Let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Ween.
Sandy, this is from the Southend Yellow Advertiser, sent in by an Essex man, Tony Christmas, and it's from the classified ads, the for sale column. Giant teddy bear, 4 foot in height and 3 foot wide, holding a heart with I love you written on it. Unwanted gift to my wife.
Nicholas.
Sandy, I'm going to read a gas bill. Final demand, £2.05. We are writing to you as our records are showing that the above amount is overdue, blah, blah, blah. Failure to make payment, blah, blah, blah. Don't hesitate to contact me. I'll read the address now of the person to whom the gas bill is addressed. Automatic Public Convenience, Kingsland Passage, Kingsland High Street. Dear Automatic Public Convenience.
Carrie.
It's from the Richmond and Twickenham Times. The latest idea in the tailoring world is the coat of 7/8 length. It is long enough to ensure delightful warmth and yet sufficiently short to completely escape any chance of soiling the bottom in bad weather.
Jeremy.
This is sent in by Pat Mayston and it's from the Tavistock Times. Newdown Young Farmers Club have produced their own tasteful calendar featuring a variety of poses with the occasional strategically placed agricultural implement to protect their modesty. They feature a variety of pictures, including members feeding the cattle, operating a chainsaw, loading straw, going shooting on a quad bike, and tightening nuts on a tractor wheel.
Now let's take a look at the final scores. Francis and Nick have got 13, but this week's winners with 14 are Jeremy and Carrie. Yeah. Here's a notice from the parish newsletter of St. John the Divine Church in Menston, spotted by Keith Bonney.
Menston Parish Church Summer Barbecue, Saturday the 7th of July. Tickets, £7.50, steak, £5, sausages, £3, children.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Carrie Quinlan, Nick Revel and Francis Reed. In the chair with Sandy Thompson, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Roger Crooks and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Danielle Ward and James Sherwood. The producer was Ed Morris.